8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the February 18th edition of Drum Attacks. Tonight on the show, we'll start off with a medley of recordings from spoken word artists in England. We'll start with the work of Deanna Roger with her poem entitled Being British, So Far London. Then we'll hear Jamaican poet Raymond Antrobus. And then we'll hear Isaiah Hull with a one mic stand recorded in November 2016. And What I Wasn't Taught in School. Then Eno Mafon doing a poem entitled Identity and Conformity Clash, Check the Label. And finally, we'll end up Warson Shire doing a piece called For Women Who Are Difficult to Love. It's all from a website presenting the work of 7 Black British poets you should know and love. So here they are.
I always get asked, where are you from? My repeated reply is London, the town that sheltered a mother fleeing from war-torn land, baby and belly given chance to be a man, a city of prosperity. She seek jobs allowing her to keep her dignity, independently living in a state, not off it, her benefit, one son, a bright boy of renewable energy. He knew all he'd ever be was a product of the city that had changed his destiny. They say, all right, but what country? I breathe deeply, swallowing sarcastic syllables, and exhale Great Britain. The island, throned in seas, that channeled safety. She carried men to defend countryside, scattered with towns full of factories, the curator of colonies, voiced view to keep view, exploit use, to heavily recruit natural warlikes, to fight aggressively with strength and bravery, 52,000 casualties, Gurkha support, over 2 world wars, nearly 500,000 fought for Great Britain. I'm teasing them, because though it's not a lie, I know it's not the desired response. And so I am not surprised when they reply, where are your parents from? See, I can't hide pigment skin within words, whether fact or fiction. So I told them I am a product of miscegenation. That parents' parents are from Jamaica and Scotland. Raised in England, they found life and made love in London to born and breed a British girl. So while I am an addict for hard food, I fiend for the smell of eggs and bacon in the morning. I'm a sucker for a cuppa, and I will batter a fish and chips in less than 15 minutes. I was raised by the church and educated by EastEnders. Friday nights of teenage life were spent going on drink benders. I can't pretend, because all I know is GB. And I suppose, on paper, I maybe, quite possibly, could read as an idle recruit for the BNP or the UKIP or the Leave, maybe. Wear my balaclava too high so my eyes can't see the route of my journey to the RWB. Tickets or qualifications on my CRB. 5 for hate crimes would get me VIP, but a face-to-face interview would refuse my application. On the grounds on which I walk on are not my birthright nation. Profile is proof of racial integration. Defies a silent slogan of skin-based segregation. And as a tick box of white Caribbean is crossed, my rights are wrong and I should politely get lost. Pack bags to try find where I belong. But before I am forced to leave, I will leave thoughts to ponder on. Where did you, your parents, and your ancestors come from? Sweet. 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 All right, final piece.
Some people would deny that I'm Jamaican British. Nose Anglo, hair straight. No way I'm Jamaican British. They think I say I'm black when I say I'm Jamaican British. But the English kids at school made me choose Jamaican British. Half caste, half mule, house slave, Jamaican British. Light skin, straight male, privileged Jamaican British. Eat the Callaloo jerk chicken, I'm Jamaican. British don't know how to serve our dishes, they enslaved us. At school, fought a boy in the lunch hall, Jamaican. At home, told dad that I hate them. All them Jamaicans, I'm British. He laughed, told me, "You cannot love sugar and hate your sweetness." Then took me straight to Jamaica, passport British. Cousins in Kingston called me Jar English, proud to have someone in their family, British. Plantation lineage, World War Services. How do I serve Jamaican, British, when knowing how to war is Jamaican, British?
I wasn't told about the 50 pounds, like. So, Wagwan, you alright? Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm Isaiah, yeah, safe. Killing me softly. Killing me softly, killing me softly. Put a pill in the coffee. Life would be better with some liquor and toffee. Licorice boxy. Sorry. No, that's not the point. All right, I'll do the point for you. I caught you there. All right, you thought that was the point. That's not the point. I was just practicing. I wrote a Hemingway along your spine and it read profanity. And biro pens that I wrote poems with, I swallowed so they'd never tell my secrets. We've been very strange. I was never raised properly, just a sloppy mannered prophet with a lot to say and a tongue that mattered not. His head, the laughing spot, the curry chicken, the ugly women, the lungs of villagers I filled with vats of ink and Saturday moments scribbled in Diprovan and Ritalin and limericks and Italica font. I never cared about Parisians, and I never will. All of my knife habits are 7-inch. All of my wives are cursed with melanin. My eyes are double and saturated in American stout ale, and all my younger siblings are dead. My mother doesn't look me in the face, but at the footprints that I give, she always wishes me gone, and I'm a terrible human. I'm a terrible human. I was on the phone for some hours, a December of a man. I remember all the times that you'd steal from the corner shops because my fingers were in your pockets at the time, and I did tell you that I liked you. In that small pocket of time that you forgot you were smiling in, I've been lost on these forgotten islands, swapping pints with Pontius Pilate. It's been a while since he's mentioned we will die together. I'm tiptoeing around the subject, to be honest. I'm trying to stay on the topic of poetry. Thank you.
Okay, so carrying on from our lesson last week, we were looking at the key divisions in the early stages of the civil rights movement and the general impact across the board. Sam, come on. Sit up straight. Right, stop slouching. This is the perfect opportunity for you to engage, to make the most of it.
Well, we learn the same stuff every year for Black History Month. Every single October, we learn the same things, either apartheid, slavery, or the civil rights. How many of you guys have actually learned something new these last years? See? That's what I mean.
Sam, this is our history. Come on, man.
Nah, seriously. Do you guys know anything about Ralph Bunche, the first black person to win a Nobel Prize? Or that the richest person ever lived was a black man named King Musa I of Mali? What about Ella Baker? What about Ella Baker? One of the most influential women of the civil rights movement. This is why I can't take Black History Month seriously, man.
But Samuel, the curriculum is designed to help you think about Black history critically.
Actually, miss, it's designed to teach us what to think, not how to think. For example, when that light switched, you taught us it was Thomas Edison who made that happen, when ironically it was actually a darker man who made that light flick, Lewis Latimer to be precise. Quite nice when you're talking about Mr. Hamilton and his racing car, but red lights stop. We're always taught that Martin Luther King had a dream, man, but those dreams can't be achieved because our brains are in chains, our minds are enslaved, so we won't get our redemption, Morgan, free man. Will we ever be free, man, and leave this state of imprisonment? And take that walk of free, damn it, green man from a traffic light invented by the same man who made gas masks to protect our organs. Another free man named Garrett Morgan. But I bet you never knew that. We need to open our minds. But how can we be taught to see if the blind lead the blind? The first person to develop significant eye surgery was a black woman named Dr. Patricia E. Barth. Now on that note, there's a question I must ask. If this is a great opportunity to learn and be engaged about our past, why are we not actually being taught about our past? Transatlantic slavery, where we're taught black history starts, but is it really? There seems to be a lot you haven't told us. And you shut down and hold back on the bold ones who stand against the way you're trying to mold us. Consistent enemies of progress. You're surprised because I know things you don't expect me to know yet. And when I tell you you're wrong for telling me about me, you call it a riot, while I call it a protest. The Broadwater Farm riots. The media exacerbate and make it seem like it's a bunch of delinquent youths on the streets, when really the first cause and trigger was death at the hands of the police. We cease to know information and the truth, and that's simply because you withhold information from the youth. Maybe. Maybe one day we'll be satisfied with how our knowledge of history equates. Well, I'm sure, like me, you're waiting for the teacher to fill in that space. So do so then. No answer. Well, maybe I can help and just throw out there some names. Mary Seacole, a Crimean war nurse. Mary Prince, a black female author. To be precise, she was the first. Bernie Grant, influential local activist and respected NP. Trevor MacDonald, one of the first black ITN journalists to hit the TV screen. Jamal Edwards and SBTV. And when Fuse ODG brought the Azonto dance to the UK, and my foot swayed to the left and to the right like the wipers of a car's windscreen, and DJ Abrante brought Afro beats to the streets. See, it's funny when we think of our childhood memories. A man who was actually funny, Lenny Henry. Many others, and the list continues. Marcus Garvey, Haile Selassie, Bob Marley, Ignatius Sancho, Tupac, Fela Kuti, Muhammad Ali, Maya Angelou, RIP, Kwame Nkrumah, the first Ghanaian president who retained independence from England. The Windrush ship which brought Caribbeans to Britain. So much to learn in just 1 month. A tip of the iceberg, a tiny grace. And what was the first black Roman emperor's name? Years passed and we're still caught up in the same civil rights age, which isn't bad if you learn something new, but we don't. And we're not being taught enough about our culture, so there's no one else to blame but you. And if not you, then who? Questions, questions, questions. If you're not teaching us these things, then I'm inclined to believe it's because you don't know. No. You're the teacher. Your job is to teach, so you must know. And if you do, that must mean you don't want us to know, but that's low. If the information is accessible for our knowledge of our culture to grow, then why on earth wouldn't you want to let us know? Why are you focused so heavily on the influential but very few men and women who made things happen for us? Why are my people being highlighted for a predominantly negative past? Why do I know the things that you don't and I'm not the teacher, you are? Why are you focused on our negative past but not on our bright future? Why are you not abreast with the great young things that people are doing in this world? Why are young people's trademarks and stereotypes gang culture and young pregnant girls? Why are the young people not being given the time of day? And his name of Septimus Severus, by the way. I'm sure as a student, the code of conduct has been breached. So I'll stop here and let you do your job. Satish.
Okay, yo peoples, how's it going? It's your boy Samuel King. This is my poem, What I Wasn't Taught in School. And you're watching Word on the Curb. Blow.
La be iki o rombo ni be la be share wa inu adun arawaya la be iki o rombo o rombo o rombo o rombo o rombo. I remember when we were younger, our hands would move so fast they'd almost blend into each other. These four hands made of one colour. Then we'd pick up pace. We'd pick up speed and laughter till our bodies joined the dance and our feet followed soon after. Our blue shoes, our white teeth, the sunflower yellow of our skirts all merged into this same dark brown. But then something began to change. Now we clap to the rhythm of two separate songs. Our four hands that became one every time we now resembles the civil handshake between two strangers. Each time we, your hands seem one shade lighter and you move one step further. Step one. Wash face gently, soap, cold water, pat dry. Step two. Mix in a ratio of 6 grams cream, 0.6 grams powder. Step 3. Use finger, apply blended mixture. Step 4. Strip back layers of dead skin, black skin, melanin. Step 5. Scrub hard till your brown face reddens. Leave cream on for 10 minutes. We used to share everything. Our clothes, our room, even our bed. There were always four brown feet dangling off the ends. But now they stand at opposite ends of a gradient scale. Since you crossed over to play with the light-skinned girls. Ingredients. Lactic acid, cortisone. Retinoic glucocorticoids, mercury chloride, hydroquinone, glycolic acid, cortisone, 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 cortisone.
For women who are difficult to love. You are a horse running alone, and he tries to tame you, compares you to an impossible highway, to a burning house, says you are blinding him, that he could never leave you, forget you, want anything but you. You dizzy him, you are unbearable. Every woman before or after you is doused in your name. You fill his mouth, his teeth ache with the memory of taste, his body just a long shadow seeking yours, but you are always too intense. frightening in the way that you want him, unashamed and sacrificial. He tells you that no man can live up to the one who lives in your head, and you tried to change, didn't you? Closed your mouth more, tried to be softer, prettier, less volatile, less awake. But even when sleeping, you could feel him traveling away from you in his dreams. So, what did you want to do, love? Split his head open. You can't make homes out of human beings. Someone should have already told you that. And if he wants to leave, then let him leave. You are terrifying and strange and beautiful. Something not everyone knows how to love.
Hi, you're listening to CKOT 90.3 on the FM dial. Those were six Black British poets taken from a website, in Brits and Pieces, B-R-I-T-S and PCS.com. And we heard the work of Deanna Roger doing a poem entitled Being British, So Far London. And then Jamaican British by poet Raymond Antrobus. Isaiah Hull did a poem entitled One Mic Stand. Samuel King did a piece, What I Wasn't Taught in School. And Eno Mufon did Identity and Conformity Clash. And finally, we heard Warson Shire doing For Women Who Are Difficult to Love. And we'll conclude the show now with a performance of Maya Angelou, taken from YouTube. Here she is.
I open my mouth to the Lord and I won't turn back, no, I will go, I shall go to see what the end is gonna be. She does not know her beauty. She thinks her brown body has no glory. If she could dance naked under palm trees and see her image in the river, she would know. But there are no palm trees on the street, and dishwater gives back no images. So I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back, no, I will go on, shall go well. Once, riding in old Baltimore, head filled, heart filled with glee, I saw a Baltimorean keep looking straight at me. Now, I was 8 and very small, and he was no whit bigger, and so I smiled. But he stuck out his tongue and called me, "Nigger!" I saw the whole of Baltimore from May until December. Of all the things that happened there, that's all that I remember. But I open my mouth to the Lord and I won't turn back, no, I will go, I shall go to see what the end is gonna be. So, thank you.
Yes, sir. Hit it. That's it.
In sincerity and in seriousness, I know that a poetry reading seems, for the most part, like a pretty dull, you know, I mean, really. You know, people say, well, where are you going tonight? Well, I'm going to the Hippodrome, taking my chances. And other people say, oh, I'm staying home with a friend, a good friend. And so when you say to somebody, I'm going to Lewisham to a poetry reading, people have got to say, ooh. Poetry is asked to be magical, mystical, lyrical, and musical. Now, before I get into the written poetry, that is the published poetry, I'll just let you look at a couple of phrases from folk songs. There's a 19th century folk song in which a black man speaks of the woman he loves. He said, the woman I love is fat and chocolate to the bone. And every time she shakes, some skinny woman loses her home. Now that's poetry. There's a line, 19th century. This shred of the folk song found its way into Mr. W.C. Handy's 20th Century Blues, St. Louis Blues. A black woman speaking of the man she loves. She said, he's blacker than midnight, teeth like flags of truth. He's the finest thing in the whole St. Louis. They say the blacker the berry. Sweeter is the Jew. That's poetry. And that's love poetry, too. Now, to look at the written poetry, I like to go to Miss Georgia Douglas Johnson. I love to talk about love, about all sorts of love, but not mush. Sentimentality to love. Romantic love, agape love, sensual love, familial love, and self-love. So I hope you brought everything you need, because for the next 4 or 5 hours, I just thought, you know, I would stick to it. Miss Georgia Douglas Johnson, who wrote, I want to die while you love me, while yet you hold me fair, while laughter lies upon my lips and lights are in my hair, yes. I want to die while you love me. Who would care to live till love had nothing more to ask and nothing more to give? No, I want to die while you love me and bear to that still bed your kisses, turbulent, unspent, to warm me while I'm dead. James Weldon Johnson, writing in 1916, wrote, the glory of the day was in her face. The beauty of the night was in her eyes, and over all her loveliness, the grace of morning, blushing in the early sky. And it seemed like to me that everything is wrong. Seemed like to me the birds done lost their song. Seemed like to me the days are just twice as long since she went away. Seemed like to me I just can't help but seem like to me my throat keeps getting dry. Seem like to me a tear stay in my eye since she went away. See, the glory of the day was in her face. In her face. In her face. James Weldon Johnson. Paul Laurence Dunbar, writing in 1892, wrote a poem called A Negro Love Song. Mr. Dunbar puts the poem in a man's voice, but this is a woman's poem. The refrain in the poem is, jump back, honey, jump back. Seen my lady home last night, jump back, honey, jump back. Held her hand and squeezed it tight, jump back, honey, jump back. I heard her sigh, that little sigh, saw that light gleam in her eye, saw a smile go flitting by. I said, jump back, honey, jump back. Hey, the mockingbird was singing, fine, jump back, honey, jump back. and my heart was beating so that when I reached my lady's door, I just couldn't bear to go. So I put my arms around her waist. Jump back, honey, jump back. I raised her lips and took a taste. Jump back, honey, jump back. I said, love me, honey, do you love me true? You love me as well as I love you? And then she answered, of course I do, the jump back. Love poetry. The books are filled with the love poetry, the Black American love poetry, I mean, from the 19th and the 20th centuries. There's a poem Nikki Giovanni wrote, a love poem, romantic. It says, one of these days, you're going to walk in this house, and I'm going to be wearing that long African gown. And you, not noticing me at all, will say, the problem in this country, and I'm going to be taking that gown off and licking your arm. You will go on as you always do. What we ought to do about the struggle, and I will be unbuckling your belt and taking down your pants. You, not noticing me at all, will say, I want to talk to the brothers. I've got to talk to the... And then you will notice your state of undress. And knowing you, you will probably turn to me and say, hey, Nikki, but isn't this counter-revolutionary? To look at love, though, all the versions of love, there is the need to see, love for what might seem to be unlovable. You all know that Black Americans for centuries were obliged to laugh when they weren't tickled, and to scratch when they didn't itch. And those gestures have come down to us as Uncle Tomming. However, I believe people live in direct relation to the heroes and sheroes they have, always and in all ways. And I don't think we often enough stop to wonder, how did that Black man feel when his throat would start to ache? And every person in this auditorium knows that feeling. When you must cry, but you won't, and you hold yourself, and then these muscles get sore. Each time that Black man had to say, yes, sir, boss, you're right, I must be stupid, yes, sir, so he could make enough money so he could go home and feed somebody. Or that Black woman who said, no, ma'am, Miss Ann, you didn't hurt me when you slapped me, I ain't tender-hearted, sure ain't, no, ma'am. So she could make enough money so she could go home and send somebody to school. I think that we live in direct relation to the heroes and sheroes we have. And sometime at some place inside our hearts, we've got to say thank you. Because I don't know about any of you, but I wouldn't be here this evening had those people not been successful in the humiliating employment of those humiliating ploys. Yes, sir. So, I honor them, and in honoring them, I honor all our ancestors who tried to stay alive and be somebody so that we could be here this evening and try to accept that we've been loved, each of us. Maybe by somebody three generations ago who never even thought what name you would carry, that they paid for you already. To look at that condition, I wrote a poem about a woman who is a maid in New York City. She sits at the back of the bus with two shopping bags, black. If the bus stops abruptly, She says, ah, if it stops slowly, picks up somebody, misses somebody. I watched her for about 9 months. And I thought, if you don't know black features, you may think that woman is laughing. She wasn't laughing. She was simply extending her lips and making a sound. I thought, oh, I see. That's that survival apparatus at work. So I wrote a poem for her. I use it with to Paul Laurence Dunbar's poem, Mask, and my own poem for old black men. This is love. When I think about myself, I almost laugh myself to death. My life has been one great big joke, a dance that's walked, a song that spoke. I laugh so hard, I nearly choke when I think about myself. 70 years in these folks' world, the child I works for calls me girl. I say, yes, ma'am, for working sake. I'm too proud to bend and too poor to break. So I laugh until my stomach ache when I think about myself. My folks can make me split my side. I laughed so hard, I nearly died. The tales they tell sound just like lying. They grow the fruit, I eat the rind. I laugh until I start to cry when I think about myself and my folks. And the little children. But we wear the mask that grins and lies. It shades our cheeks and hides our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but oh my God, our tears to thee from tortured souls arise. Oh, we sing, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby. But oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet, and long the mile. Let the world think otherwise. We wear the mask. My fathers sit on benches. Their flesh count every plank. The slats leave dents of darkness deep in their withered flank, and they nod like broken candles, all waxed and burnt profound. They say, but baby, it was our submission, and that made your world go round. There, in those pleated faces, I see the auction block, the chains and slavery's coffles, the whip and lash and stock. My father speak in voices that shred my fact and sound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission that made your world go round. They laughed to shield their crying. They shuffled through their dreams. They step and fetched a country and wrote the blues in screams. I understand their meaning. It could and did derive from living on the ledge of death. They kept my race alive by wearing the mask. You see, that too is love, Leslie. That is love. When any human being is willing to allow herself or himself to be seen at the most debased level, most demeaned, most dehumanized level, thinking that by doing so, he or she can assure the survival of yet another human being, that is love. Howbeit bitter, brutal, painful, that too is love. Now, to look at, well, self-love. I'm very keen about self-love. Very. Well, because there's an African saying which is, be careful when a naked person offers you a shirt. I mean, if the person had any clothes, he'd put some on himself first, right? So I never trust anybody who says, I love you, and the person doesn't love herself or himself. How can he? How can you give something you don't have? So I always encourage self-love. That's why I sometimes think we ought to deal with that first. You must find something wondrous, the uniqueness of one's own self, to remind us that each of us is worthy. Some years ago, I wrote a play in New York, and I'd written the book, the lyric, the music, and we were to open, and the night before we were to open, the producer, who had all the money, told me that the play needed a work song. So there was no time to whimper or whine or even be cross. I just wrote a work song. I wanted to write about men and women working together because that to me is healthy. So I wrote, there ain't no pay beneath the sun, sweet as the rest when a job's well done. I was born to work up to my grave, but I was not born to be a slave. One more round, let's heave it down. One more round, let's heave it down. Papa drove steel, Mama stood guard. Never heard them holler cause the work was hard. They were born to work. It goes on, there are about 98 verses. Well, when I heard the professional singer sing it, I realized I had written a man's work song. I mean, I had simply put women in the lyric. But it was a traditional tote that barge and a whack-tone boom and a jukebox and all that. And, you know, I don't knock that. It's just that I didn't mean to write a man's work song. I wanted a man and woman's work song. So I decided to try to write a woman's work song, looking at how fantastic we are. So I thought of that cliche that men may work from sun to sun if they can find jobs, but women's work is never done. So I wrote, I've got the children to tend, the clothes to mend, the floor to mop, the food to shop, then the chicken to fry, the baby to dry, I got company to feed, the garden to weed, I got the shirts to press, the tops to dress, the cane to be cut, I got to clean up this hut, then see about the sick, then the cotton to pick. Shine on me, sunshine. Rain on me, rain. Fall softly, dewdrops, and cool my brow again. Storm blow me from here with your fiercest wind. Let me float across the sky till I can rest again. Because I have got to see about those people's pool. No, no. I got to get to the school. No, no. Oh, I got to pick up the mail. No, no, no. I got to visit the jail. No. I got to pick up. Then. Too true. This is a poem called Weekend Glory. Yeah, I think you'll... Only one thing. There's a first line says, some dicty folks. Dicty is a black American southern word meaning hinkty, which means sadity, which is a word sort of meaning snobbish, haughty. Some Dicty folks don't know the facts, posing and preening and putting on acts, stretching their necks and straining their backs. They move into condos up over the ranks, lend their souls to the local banks, buy big cars they can't afford, then ride around town acting bored. My job at the plant ain't the biggest bet, but I pay my bills and stay out of debt. I get my hair done for my own self's sake, so I don't have to pick and I don't have to rake. I take the church money out, then I head cross town to my friend girl's house where we plan our round. We meet our men and go to a joint where the music is blues and to the point. Folks talk about me, they just can't see how I work all week at the factory, then get spruced up and laugh and dance and turn away from worry with a sassy glance. They accuse me of living from day to day. Who are they kidding? So are they. My life ain't heaven, but it sure ain't hell. I'm not on top, but I call it swell. If I'm able to work and get paid right and have the luck to be black on a Saturday night. Hey! Self-love is very important. You got to look at yourself and like it. Now, I've written a poem for women because we are so phenomenal. Yes. Now, I wrote this poem for black women. I wrote it for Asian women. I wrote it for Hispanic women, Native American women. I wrote it for women in the kibbutzim of Israel and in Palestinian concentration camps. I wrote it for all women. We have not even begun to test our potential, but it's there. It's there. We have a wonderful promise. Now, I know that men are as phenomenal as women. I know that because I know that nature abhors imbalance. Like you, I have been told that 98% of all the species which have lived on this little blob of spit and sand are now extinct because they got out of balance. We are still here, which proves to me that we are in some balance. Men are as phenomenal as women. I will only say this to the men in the audience. You will have to write your own poem. Is fresh. I wrote it for fat women, very fat, those who hate their sizes but will do nothing about it except call a friend in the middle of the night and say, girl, there's a skinny woman still trying to get out. And I wrote it for fat women who love their sizes and who are the epitome of sensuality when they walk down the street. I wrote it for skinny women, those who deserve all our sympathy. I wrote it for all. That's it. Many people wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I try to show them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenal. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man the fellows stand. I fall down on their knees. And then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, oh, it's the fire in my eyes, the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist, the joy in my feet. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, oh, it's in the arch of my back. And now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk too loud. When you see me walking, it ought to make you proud. I say it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hands, the need for my care, because I'm a woman. Phenomenally. Phenomenal woman. That's my mother and all your mothers. And then my grandmothers, and all your grandmothers, and my great-grandmothers, and your great-grandmothers, and my great-great-great, and your great-great-great, and all you women here, and me. Okay, I started out with romantic love, and I think I will look at love, romantic love again. They went home and told their wives that never once in all their lives had they met a girl like me. But they went home. My praises were on all men's lips. They liked my smile, my wit, my hips. They'd spend one night, or two, or three. But well, I began to wonder, having written that, it's a little longer poem than that, but what, I mean, I began to wonder about some of the men, not any of the people in this audience. You know, I know that none of you all are doing, no, but I mean, what was it that would make a man play so cavalierly with a lady's heart and other parts of the anatomy? I wonder, you know, what? So, now, you know, gentlemen, none of you, this is not signifying at all. No, sir. So I wrote another little poem, trying to look at it from the man's point of view. There's a long-legged girl in San Francisco by the Golden Gate. She said she'd give me all I wanted. But I just couldn't wait. I started to picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them down and getting to the next town, baby. Now, picking them up and laying them down is a black American phrase meaning walking. You know, it's picking them up and laying. And then it means however you can, you know, whatever you. I met that lovely Detroit lady and thought my time had come. But just before I said I do, I said I got to run and started to picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them down and getting to the next town, baby. There's a pretty brown in Birmingham, man, she's little and cute. But when she tried to tie me down, I had to grab my suit and start to picking them up and laying them down and picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them down and getting to the next town, baby. There ain't no words for what I feel about a pretty face. But if I stay, I just might miss a prettier one someplace. That's why I start that picking them up and laying them down, picking them up and laying them. Now, men, you know I'm not talking about you. Well, I thank you very much for your hospitality, which is truly Southern. Now, I know that Lewisham is South, but it's not quite North Carolina, but I really thank you, and I would remind you of a wonderful African saying, which is, the trouble for the thief is not how to steal the chief's bugle, but where to blow it. The issues which face us all are not just how to survive. Obviously, we are doing that somehow. But really, how to thrive. Really. Thrive with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style. This poem is called And Still I Rise. Now, every person in this auditorium has gone to sleep one night or another, or gone to bed one night or another, with fear, or pain, or loss, or terror, unhappiness, grief, insecurity, and yet each of us has awakened, arisen, seen another human being and said, morning, how are you? Fine, thanks, and you? Now, wherever that abides, whether it's behind the kneecap or in the bend of the elbow or between the teeth, wherever that is, lives, there we will find our nobleness. Not nobility, I think that's a pompous word, but the nobleness of the human spirit, that we rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Just because I walk as if I have oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my sassiness upset you? Don't take it so hard just because I laugh, as if I have gold mines digging in my own backyard. You can shoot me with your words. You can cut me with your lies. You can kill me with your hatefulness. But just like life, I'll rise. Does my sexiness offend you? Oh. Does it come as a surprise that I dance? As if I have diamonds at the meeting of my thighs. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past rooted in pain, I rise. A black ocean leaping and wide, welling and swelling and bearing in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak miraculously clear, I rise, bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the hope and the dream of the slave. And so, wow, there I go.
Well, you've been listening to the work of Maya Angelou. So this concludes this week's edition of Dramatext. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word. Till then. Yeah.
money shot.
Open the door. Seek new world. In here.
Show pour le Monstonde. Nous sommes jeudi le 18 février. Il est 21h. Ce soir à l'émission, nous explorons l'œuvre du défunt Chick Corea, qui est mort récemment. 2 heures de musique de Chick Corea. La première heure sélectionnée par moi-même, François Letourneau. Et en deuxième heure, à partir de 10h, ce sera Hugo Léger qui va nous faire part de sa sélection. On commence avec la pièce Drone de l'album Circulus. Qui est sorti en 1978, qui a été par contre enregistré en 1970. En fait, ça serait le premier et seul album studio du groupe Circle, même si elle a été releasé sous le nom de Chick Corea plusieurs années plus tard. Donc le groupe Circle. C'était Chick Corea, Anthony Braxton, Dave Holland et Barry Altschul. Vous êtes sur les ondes de CKUT 90.3 FM et vous écoutez de la musique d'adultes.